You know, Hank, I was just wondering why you say that "Hey Now" thing.
What do you mean?
Well, it's just something that you used on the show, and now you're starting to use it in your personal life, and it's an affectation of some sort, isn't it? Did you ever say "Hey Now" as a kid?
No, I don't. I probably didn't.
Uh-huh.
I said, "Hey."
Yeah.
And I said, "Now." I mean, at different times. I never put them together till later in life.
Uh-huh.
So, in that sense, it's part of my personality.
You know, Hank, this isn't easy for me, but would you mind not doing it on the show anymore? Because, frankly, I'll tell you the truth.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that when you do your... You do this? That isn't the same affectation? That isn't the same as my, "Hey now!"
There, you just said it again. And, you know, I asked you not to say it.
I can't say it off stage either?
It doesn't even exist. Use "Hey now" in a sentence, Hank.
"Hey now, that was real funny."
You know what, Hank? It's not even in the dictionary, "Hey now."
Okay. This is how I use "Hey now" in a sentence, okay? You say... "And of course, my sidekick, Hank."
"And of course, my sidekick, Hank."
"Hey now!"
"Hank."
"That's a sentence."
"No." "Hank, listen. I just prefer you not do it on the show anymore, okay? I just, it gets on my nerves. It gets on the audience's nerves as well."
"No, sir. No,
yes,
sir.
It does."
"No.
Hank.
Look, you're not out there. And believe me, it is, it's very big with the audience.
No.
And I'm going to tell you something else. I think it helps make the show work. It's part of our whole interplay on camera."
"By interplay, you mean the times we're both... awake?"
"Hey now."
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
"I'll show you. Heckle me. Go ahead."
"Listen, I'm very busy and I got a sore throat."
"Come on. Heckle me. Come on. Don't worry. Hit me hard."
"Get off the stage, you fucking moron! I've taken shits more interesting than you are. You're not but Larry Sanders' personal fuck bitch. So shut your fucking fat face and get your goddamn bloated ass off the stage, motherfucker!"
Oh, Jesus, Hardy.
Come back.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Good comeback. Every once in a while, I dig up a clip from something that just, I can't stop laughing. That is so.
Which
that
episode was that? I haven't come across that one yet in my Netflix.
Well, there's I forget what season it is, but it's the one where Hank wants to be roasted.
Oh, right, yeah. I think that's season 4.
Yeah, and then five, the and then the "Hey Now" thing is from an earlier season.
It's from the pilot, I believe.
Yeah.
The "Hey Now" episode.
"Hey Now." Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
That's the
one
with the
Larry Sanders marathoning lately.
Such a great show. I miss it. I really miss it. I mean, it's one of those shows that I wish it continued on and on and on. And I got to thinking about it because there was a Pioneers of Television special on last night about late-night television.
Oh.
And I was gretzing about it on Twitter because, you know, they cover Steve Allen, Jack Parr, and Johnny Carson, and then just completely gloss over Kovacs, which I think
is... you've got this Kovacs thing up your ass.
Well, you know what? It's credit where credit is due, for God's sake. I mean, the guy hosted The Tonight Show. I mean, Steve Allen would routinely steal from him. I mean, The Answer Man, which is Steve Allen's most famous character, The Answer Man, was stolen from Kovacs's Mr. Question Man. I mean, it was just, I mean, the guy would just wholesale steal bits from Ernie Kovacs. I mean, everything, going to the audience and leaving the studio, I mean, all that was Kovacs. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, I started thinking about
it. Penniless and insane and buried in a pauper's grave in Madison, Wisconsin, Ernie Kovacs. I made all that up.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
But "Hey Now," you know, I chose "Hey Now" because not only is that an extraordinarily funny clip, but we and just coincidentally enough, prior to the show, we were texting, busting on each other's catchphrases, I think. Well, not catchphrases.
Oh, I get it now, yeah. Because I say "huzzah," which is very refined and classical and British. And you say "excelsior," which I find extremely gay.
I don't know why.
Is extremely masculine.
Yeah, "huzzah" is masculine, right?
It is.
And "excelsior" is somehow gay, which is...
Yeah. Absolutely.
Very progressive of you, by the way.
Thank you. Huzzah!
Right?
Yeah.
And I said, well, maybe I should change. You know, I've just been saying, it's not a catchphrase. I've just been saying it as a reaction lately, just as a generic sort of texting reaction to things. Excelsior, which is, it's a Latin word. And then Stan Lee popularized it in the comics, in the Marvel comics. Excelsior. Excelsior. And it's been a few other things, I think, but I know it from
Stan Lee, who I think is probably gearing up for a lawsuit now over this Spider-Man musical.
Looks
to be. I just want to go and see that. Just praying that somebody falls on my head and injures me like that SNL skit.
Yeah, the enormously gay Stan Lee because of Excelsior.
He's extremely gay.
Have you seen the pictures? Speaking of Spider-Man, the pictures of the new Spider-Man costume for the new rebooted movie.
It didn't look terribly different to me. I glanced at it. I saw something on Super Punch, superpunch.blogspot.com. About it, but I didn't. Is it awful?
It looks awful. It really does.
Really?
There's a promotional picture that's floating around this past week that's not too bad, but the shots, like the shots from the set, I mean, look like that Spider-Man costume from Electric Company. Remember Spider-Man on Electric Company? It was like that. It was like really like just some guy, like the grip, like they hired the grip to come in and put on like a.
I'm googling it now, trying to get I remember thinking the same thing about the. Oh, good lord!
Yeah, it's like
fuck.
It looks like schmutz. It's got schmutz on it, and then he's got
schmutz, and his package is very unpleasantly displayed. And I don't care for this kid much. I don't like his head. So yeah,
okay.
It might be a franchise that I'm signing out on, but
yeah.
But I remember seeing the very first on set like. You know, iPhone pictures of the new Batman costume, which in Batman Begins did look a little chunky and weird. But, you know, it's the story that matters, really.
Yeah.
And well, as long as they get away from that kind of it seemed like the CGI effects on the Spider-Man on the Raimi Spider-Man franchise got worse as the movies went on.
Yeah.
Like, I thought the first one had some of the – or maybe I guess the second one, which was an amazing movie. But then the third one just looked like complete shit. I don't know where that $100 million that they spent on that went.
Third one was a clusterfuck. They shoehorned
worst.
Shoehorned Sandman in there at the last minute, wasn't it? They went back in and
– nothing came of that arc at all. It was the biggest waste of it's the Tim Burton Batman itis where you get four or five different bad guys in there and just fuck up the whole movie.
Yeah, and you know what? I hate to say it, but I think Christopher Nolan is falling prey to that with the Batman series, with the new Batman series, the Christian Bale Batman. Because I read in the new Batman movie, I think there's going to be the Catwoman's going to be in that.
Yeah.
Anne Hathaway is going to be Catwoman, and then but there's also going to be another a couple of villains in there.
Yeah,
I mean, so it's going to be like an array. It's going to be a rogues gallery.
The last one didn't need
Two-Face. They could have held that. That was such a great storyline. They could have held that for the next one
with Ledger. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I could have just watched him just talk to the camera. He was so absolutely spellbinding.
Yeah.
I didn't need Harvey Dent, and that actor annoys me for some reason. So yeah, I didn't need any of that.
Yeah. Have you seen Thank You for Smoking?
I mean, he was great in that. Yeah. No, that's a great movie. Yeah. He was good in that. He's been good in some things, but sometimes he's good in Aaron Brockovich. But sometimes he just annoys me, and I get him confused with Thomas Jane all the time.
Yeah.
From Hung.
So, but yeah, but the new Spider-Man suit is terrible looking.
That does look.
We can agree on that. I mean, it's and it's got like he's got like little silver booties on. He's got like silver slippers or something like that. Because I think the conceit is that he doesn't really have spider powers. He's got, I don't know. He's got something else to help him. Maybe. Maybe the booties help him to, or maybe the booties prevent him from sticking to things that he doesn't want to stick to. I have no idea.
Yeah, I've never really understood how the Spider-Man. The powers work, right? I mean, do the gloves have little tiny holes in them? Or, I mean, I don't know. I never understood it. I know is they're getting goddamn close on Smallville to suiting up and becoming Superman. So it's been 10 goddamn years with this no flights, no tights bullshit. It's time to roll. So I know you've never watched that show in your whole life, but it's time to become Superman now.
Well, they
get on with it.
They cast a new Superman character or a Superman actor for the movie, for the next movie, for the reboot of that. And exactly. And it's a guy, the guy from The Tudors. Well, I don't know, it's on Showtime or something. Yeah,
the British guy?
I think the main guy from The Tudors.
Oh my lord.
Is the new Superman. Which is just a huge mistake. What they need to do, if they're going to reboot these series, what they need to do is go with sort of who's that artist who does the really realistic paintings of the superheroes? Of like the Justice League. And they're really, really like the Superman painting is Superman, but as a middle-aged guy. I'm trying to look it up here.
Superman.
Well, you know what?
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is going to be the new Superman.
I think so.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. He's a twig. I could kick that guy's ass.
Yeah.
Well, not me, but somebody with muscles.
Right. Well, you know, I'm thinking that what they ought to do, and this is where I was leading with that, is that I always thought that John Hamm should be the new Superman.
Oh, that'd be badass.
John Hamm would be a great Superman. And let's face it, I mean, John Hamm's not old either. I mean, John Hamm is what? John Hamm is our age. I mean, John Hamm is like a couple of months younger than me.
He'd make a great Clark Kent.
Yeah. Alex Ross.
Glasses on.
Yeah, yeah. Alex Ross is the artist. He's one of my favorite comic artists. Mainly does covers, but yeah, Alex Ross. For some reason, I kept thinking, I'm in politics mode. I kept thinking of Alex Jones. It can't be Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah, but look up Alex Ross does like the superheroes, but as realistic sort of, kind of muscle guys, like older guys. Like kind of weathered, like
sort of the anti Ron Liebfield.
Yeah, like Superman's
the
got like
worst
like,
artist of all time.
Right, Superman's got like gray hair, like some gray hair in there.
Yeah,
yeah. And so that,
yeah, I mean, but John Hamm would be awesome.
John Hamm would be great.
I mean, he's got the physical bulk, and he could really. Oh, I'm turning myself on now.
Yeah,
a little delayed reaction there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I you look at John Hamm and you think, well, this guy could be a great Superman. At least that was my train of thought. And of course, I go to the nerd prom.
Yeah,
I'm thinking, oh yeah, I'm watching Mad Men. That guy plays Superman. But they keep casting these, these 17-year-old douchebags.
Pretty boys. Yeah. Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is a delightful. I mean, he's got I'd kiss that guy right on the mouth, but I don't want to see him as Superman, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
He was great in that Woody Allen movie with Scarlett Johansson.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whose name I can't remember, but that was a good movie. Match Point, something like that. Match Point? I don't know. That was a good movie. Yeah.
I have no idea who that actor is. I mean, I've never seen The Tudors either, so
Oh, he's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But he's just not Superman, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
There's a very odd fog settling on the Farm of Doom right now.
Is there?
Just noted. Yeah. Our weather has sucked. So it's the great melt off around here now, which I hate.
Oh, that's what
I hate this period where between. I really don't care for spring. I really don't. It's, at least on the Farm of Doom, it's soggy and disgusting. And what's happening is with the cats. We talked last week about the cat farm I'm running here.
Yep.
What they've done is they keep a tight cat-like perimeter around the two units, the garage where they live and the house where they want to come in, and they mark the territory by peeing, right? I mean, they're peeing all over around the house, and they've been doing that in the snow, and now the snow is melting into the groundwater, which comes up in my sumps in the basement. So now, without a cat having ever set foot inside the house, it smells like cat pee in the basement.
Okay.
It's time to get the goddamn hell out of here.
Yeah, you're not gonna have to worry about any of this. Just completely go through like a rock star with a sledgehammer and just bash everything damn good, and then. And then
I'm not going to say I'm going to do that.
Bug out.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Chase is going to sue me. But
as you know, I'm sort of in a similar circumstance in that I'm trying to sell my house. And as it turns out, I discovered over the weekend that it looks like my house is going to be a short sale.
Oh, well, yeah.
Market kind of tanked in that area. And now we're skimming. Well, I should say I'm skimming that edge of hitting into the commissions and the fees.
Oh yeah.
So it's the principal plus the commissions and the fees, and I'm bumping right along there. So, my real estate agent goes,
lucky.
it's probably going to be a short sale. Yeah, you know what? I probably am. because you know, of course, what that means. Much like you, I can just put my wallet back in my pocket. Is what I can do at this point. So long, suckers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's exactly every what it time is. Something new happens since all this has started, I just laugh, just like enjoy. What it's just I can't wait for something else to happen that will just make me happy. Before it was just a giant stomach ache. Right. You know, like, oh my God, what is that going to cost me to fix? Like the snow is melting now on the north lawn. I'm looking out my office window right now, and it's just gutted by gopher holes.
Yeah.
Just massive tunnels where they've just uprooted the earth. And then what happens is, last summer we had this massive white grub infection.
Mm-hmm.
Infestation, like the whole area had it. People's lawns were just going completely to shit. And these grubs get under the surface. They live right along the edge where the root line is on the grass, and they eat the root line. So your lawn basically just moves. You know, it's not rooted down.
Yeah.
And then it dies. But gophers and these goddamn raccoons love to come over at night and dig those grubs up and eat them. Mm-hmm. So my lawn is it just looks awful right now. It's just absolutely terrible. And there's nothing I can do about it. The stuff that you treat these grubs with.
Milky spore.
I'd have to buy like a grain silo full of it to treat my lawn. So fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let nature take its course. I can't wait to come. I hope someday I'm going to come back to this place like 10 years and be completely overgrown with ivy and kudzu and just, like, you know, like caving in. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
It'd be like that Discovery Channel special, Life After People. It'll just be disintegrating, right?
Dinosaurs walking around.
Like 1,000 cats living there. You know, that's they've just taken over.
Exactly.
Like the skyscrapers and, you know, Life After People in New York, you know.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got chipmunks are burrowing, like maybe not the next owner, but the owner after that, the whole slab holding up the air conditioner is going to collapse into the earth because chipmunks have created an entire network of tunnels under that slab.
Oh, nice.
So, I mean,
they're huge. My entire garage is tectonically unstable. it's in the floor of the garage is in four separate giant pieces. So enjoy.
And here's the problem. Here's my issue with the short sale. There are two banks involved. There's the primary mortgage, which is way, way, way far away from being underwater. I mean, it's literally like 70 grand away from being anywhere close.
Well, that's nice.
The second mortgage, however, brings us up to that. It would be the second. It would be the first mortgage plus the second mortgage plus the commissions and fees brings us right up to the sale price.
Yeah.
That brings it right up basically to the value of the home compared to with the comparables.
Yeah. Right.
The comparables deciding what that value is.
Well, see, that's one problem I've always had with this place is comparables. There is literally not a comparable within, I don't know what they said, like 100 miles of this place. I mean, it's the Farm of Doom is so unique with the interior and what they did to it all. The guy I bought it from, his dad lived in the place, and I think that guy's dad built it. So, I mean, it had always been in this one family. And they own the car dealership in town. So what he did, the guy that I bought it from, he leveraged his dealership, his family dealership, his dad's car dealership, against all these upgrades he did. He must have put literally $200,000 into this place to make it suitable for his wife to move in because he wanted to trade places with his dad. So his dad moved into their old house in town, and they moved out to the Farm of Doom. But his wife wouldn't do that unless they totally gutted it and turned it into this palace that it is today, right? Mm-hmm. With the imported Turkish hand-painted sinks and the claw-footed tub and just all this fucking ridiculous stuff. So he ended up going tits up bankrupt because of that, because he sold it so far underwater. So there just isn't a comparable. I mean, it's just not a comparable anywhere.
Well, the
real estate agents have always had a problem with that.
I mean, I should call my house the McMansion of Doom, because I mean, it's like a 3,000 square foot, you know, spec, you know, in a development of all the same, you know, style of house. And here's what I was getting at with the two mortgages. Of course, when there are two mortgages, a short sale's next to impossible. So where does that lead us?
Yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah.
No short sale. Again, so long, suckers.
Yeah,
I mean that's what it comes down to. I mean I'm in the same boat as you. We're talking the big F word.
Yeah,
I mean that's what we're looking at here. Thank you very much, politicians in Wall Street.
Yeah, Wall Street.
So much because you know why? You know what? Before all of this craptastical shit came down with the economy, this house was worth maybe $50,000-$60,000 more than it is now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I mean I could have sold it at that point in time, cashed out. Been in great shape.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're told that housing values continue to go up. It's great. Totally conservative investment. Great investment. Why piss away your money with renting? Well, guess what? Guess what I'll be doing for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Piss away your money with renting, my ass. When I look at my returns, when I do my taxes, I look at how much I pay just in interest, you know, in a given year. And I'm just like, what the hell?
That's right.
I mean, if I just put that – just what I put in interest straight into the bank. Peanuts College is done in 6 years. I mean, done. Mm-hmm. It's just sickening. So, you know, whatever. Fuck it. I made some bets. Yes, I take complete, full personal responsibility, the way Republicans like to talk about personal responsibility, for all of my many financial woes, regardless of the fact that the tanking economy – because I'm in a sales related job, I made $20,000 less last year. You know, I still, and the fact that the personal bankruptcy laws changed so drastically that certain avenues just aren't available.
No.
The problem was I still had my job, right?
Yeah.
I was almost, that's why I was saying I was hoping that the economy tanked so bad that everybody was just unemployed and then everyone can just walk away from their debt and not feel guilty or like a slug.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had points before Bush and that personal bankruptcy bill went through. There were times when I was considering it, but I always wanted to be – not just for the credit hit, but I always wanted to be – just pay my debts. I mean, they're legitimate debts. None of them were really medical. I felt a moral obligation to society and myself to pay my debts. But and since I always had my job, I made $20,000 less last year, but I still was employed. There just really isn't a debt a clearinghouse kind of chapter you can file for personal bankruptcy anymore.
Yeah, no, there's not. You'd have to do Chapter 13,
I want 7.
Now you're still on the hook with paying it all back, Chapter 13.
Yeah, and it's just as bad. I mean, it's bankruptcy is bankruptcy. Yeah. You know, as far as your credit's concerned, it's just as bad.
Right.
But you've just reorganized everything, and all your credit cards are shut off.
That's right.
I mean, I'm paying everything I can on the ones I've got just to keep a line of credit open, you know? Mm-hmm.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, it's brutal. I can't wait to be out of here and not worry just all the time, because that's what I'm doing right now, is just worrying all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a solid 2 years just like sitting bolt upright in bed at like 3 o'clock in the morning with like these little panic attacks, like you're just looking at the business debt that I had that I actually I was able to get rid of with a Chapter 7, because it's business debt. It wasn't personal debt. I mean, I was free and clear on personal debt apart from my house. But it was all business debt, so I got away with the Chapter 7. But you know, if I had to do it as a personal debt and done Chapter 13, I never would have passed the means test. So I would have had to pay it all back anyway. So
I've never passed the means test.
Yeah, so it was between that and just a shit pile of other things. And yeah, I mean, it's like, how did I sleep for 2 years? I didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I really didn't.
Oh, I did with the delightful Maker's Mark. is what I do. I mean, I need two things to sleep. I need some sort of media running.
Yeah.
A TV, my laptop with a movie on it, Netflix. I need something in the background, and I need about a quart and a half of Maker's Mark. Mm. Otherwise, I would just be, like you said, bolt upright, worrying myself sick.
Yeah.
I mean, literally sick of, you know, what is going to happen to me and my, you know, to Peanut.
Well, yeah.
And so, yeah, luckily I have that avenue available to me that I can black myself out.
Exactly.
Last night I watched a Little Shop of Horrors until I conked out. Another delightful musical.
Well, two items of good news that, I mean, we're coming to the end of it. I think we're both coming to the light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, I feel like I'm really in the light at this point. I feel great. But I mean, and the other thing is, I think, despite the things we've been bitching about for the last few weeks running, we're actually not as bad off as a lot of people. And I keep
God, no,
this.
I don't want to give that impression at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still ridiculously, you know, comfortable, mm-hmm. and will be even after the Pharma Doom goes tits up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fairly good at my job, even though I hate it. You know, yeah, I got nothing to complain about, and I'm fairly healthy except for I tweeted the other night that my bedtime snack was a thing of Haagen-Dazs coffee ice cream and a thing of Maker's Mark, and so that my cirrhosis of the liver was racing my pending heart attack to see which one kills me first. But otherwise, I mean, every time I go to the doctor thinking that I'm about to drop dead, they say, "No, you're unbelievably healthy."
Yeah, well, that's
good. I'm something of a hypochondriac, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I heard some of your work happening before the show. And,
yes, you
and,
did. Just want to kill yourself.
Conference call. That's right. I wanted to kill myself. For the record, yeah. At the end of the day, are we on the same page?
Net-net?
Net-net?
Oh, God.
Oh, my God,
I just
want to
fucking stab myself in the eye. And, you know, I get this thing, oh, we need you on this call at 2 o'clock Pacific time. I'm like, well, that's 4 o'clock my time. That's really eating into my drinking time. And they're like, you know, and it's about this and this and this. I'm like, in the back of my head, I'm going, okay. And then in the back of my head, I'm going, nope, don't know anything about that. Gotta go out and, you know, get on the Google machine and become immediately genius at this stuff. Because the team I work for is just assumed, if you've got a person from my team, excluding me, it's assumed that you've got the tip-top brass, you know, on that call. And, oh, my God, I'm so phoning it in these days. You can just tell by the tone of my voice how little I give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You get to the point where you just go, fuck it. You just, I mean, everything just piles up to a certain extent, and you have to. You have no choice, because the alternative is you just allow your neuroses to gobble you up. The stress just continues to eat away at your internal organs.
Yeah.
And you just got to go fuck
it.
I'm
going to end up like Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
That's right.
I mean, literally going to be that guy if I don't just vent it out my spleen somehow.
That's right.
It's awful. Right. And another good byproduct of – I mean, at least you have the career mobility in that you can do what you do basically anywhere.
Yeah.
And you enjoy, I think, what you do.
Yes, I do.
Outside of this. I, on the other hand, you know, with the Farm of Doom around my neck, I simply cannot, I couldn't even lateral, you know, to go to another. First of all, I have the privilege of working from home, which saves me from the Farm of Doom perspective with what it would cost me to drive to a town, a city every day. That saves me hundreds of dollars a week, literally, just being able to work from home. I could not lateral and stay in the Farm of Doom and make what I make in this economy in this job market. I mean, I would have to take a huge, huge hit if I wanted to just walk out of this job and get something else. So dumping the Farm of Doom, getting that albatross off my back, out of my neck, out from around my neck, is a huge career move as well, because that gives me career mobility. You know, if I'm renting and I know what my budget is and I know what my rent is, I can then go and find a job that I don't hate so much. Mm-hmm. And that's huge as well. So, you know, it has this added benefit of getting me career motivated again, because I really haven't been in so long.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a period of time where working for myself, which is what I do. I mean, I have my own business apart from all the politics stuff. I mean, the majority of my income comes in from doing animation work, doing animated cartoons. And so, I mean, that's all great. And I love the mobility of it. I mean, I'm literally doing it from a place that is just fucking awesome right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing is, there's the one big downside, which is there's no job stability. I mean, the work that I'm doing right now could dry up tomorrow, and I'd kind of be screwed. Yeah. I mean, I get like beer money basically from the blog, and I'm grateful for it, and I don't mean to diminish it, but it's not, I can't live on it. I mean, it's impossible. I don't know hardly anyone except maybe the top level A-list bloggers who like Arianna Huffington, who's
Andrew Sullivan,
who's
from the opposite end of that spectrum,
right?
You know, like a one man, one blog, and he literally just does it 12, 14 hours a day and lives on it.
By the way, I was glad to see him coming back. I was getting a little worried there. He was gone for a while, and of course he's HIV positive, and you keep thinking, good Lord, when he's out sick, you kind of go, there's something going on there. But he's back. He's back and vlogging, which is good news.
Hugely missed, Andrew. I'm glad you're feeling better.
So this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. I'm Bob. Mm-hmm. That's Elvis over there. Brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com. That's www.bubblegenius.com. Pure products, pure genius. Bubble Genius, the best goddamn soap in the world. We'll talk about them a little bit more later on. But I don't know if you saw this before we came on the air here, but Hailey Barber is in the news again.
Uh-oh.
And Hailey Barber is refusing to denounce, I don't know if you saw this item, but Mississippi wants to do these KKK license plates. They're basically, they're honoring Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Right.
KKK founder Nathan Bedford Forrest with license plates.
They're not honoring him for that. I mean, it's just a Nathan Bedford Forrest. I mean, the plates aren't to honor the KKK, but Nathan Bedford Forrest. I mean, here's a funny story. I grew up, I mean, we all know I'm from Mississippi, but I grew up in Forrest County, and that's Nathan Bedford Forrest County. It's he did that, but he also did, you know, some other shit. But, it's because, he can't come out and say, well, fuck that guy. And he's not condoning the KKK. I mean, the KKK seems comically irrelevant today to me, I guess. I mean, I know their membership rolls have exploded since Obama, but, I don't get my nuts in a twist over the KKK anymore.
Well, I mean, here's the thing with Nathan Bedford Forrest. It's easy to bring him up in conversation when you're discussing, when you're in a deep conversation about, say, Civil War history.
Yeah.
That's fine. I think Nathan Bedford Forrest in a generic setting like a license plate is reasonably offensive.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, it's government sponsorship. It's state government sponsorship of someone who you know, really shouldn't. But look at the Confederate flag, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – in every time I see a Confederate flag, I'm infinitely more offended than, you know, if I saw a fucking Forrest license plate. I mean, the Confederate flag is the biggest symbol of treason against the federal government ever.
Yeah. Well, it's a matter. It's yeah. I mean, what you're speaking of here is a matter of context. I mean, you see the Confederate flag atop the State House in South Carolina. That's going to be offensive. If you see the Confederate flag
in the back window of pickup trucks.
Well, yeah, either that too. But if you see it, say,
I want to fucking run into.
Say, there's a bunch of Confederate reenactors, reenacting a battle, a Civil War battle, and they've got the Confederate flag. That's part of the gear, I guess. I'll never understand those Confederate reenactors, by the way, but it is part of the accoutrements that they have to carry along. So it's context. But you put it in the back of a, you put the Confederate flag or Nathan Bedford Forrest or any of these things on a license plate or in the back window of a pickup truck or on the State House, the flagpole of the State House. It's gonna piss people off, and
rightly so.
And Hailey Barber isn't an idiot. I mean, what he's doing here is he's clearly trying to hang on to those good old boys. He wants to keep that because, I mean, they're really the guys who help him get reelected. These skinny white crackers in the backwoods of Mississippi. They're the ones who, I mean, they're the ones who look at Hailey Barber and say, he's a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I still believe that Hailey Barber's got a strong chance of being that vice presidential running mate as the built-in Southern strategy, because I mean, he just exudes it. I mean, look at this. I mean, he's like the poster boy for being soft on, on racism.
Yeah.
It just surrounds him. Whatever he does, Hailey Barber just has to appear on TV and he's like a walking, talking white hands ad. He's like a walking, talking Willie Horton ad. All you have to do is hear that voice, that sort of shit eating drawl. And it's totally, he just screams out, be afraid of me.
Yeah. Because that's why he's politically irrelevant. I mean, that's just not, like I said, every white male candidate for president in 2012 is a giant cultural step backwards from what happened in 2008. It's, that's why I say, bring it on, line them up, let's see them.
So he says, Barbara says, I don't go around denouncing people. That's not going to happen. I don't even denounce the news media. I know there's not a chance it'll become a law. So, I mean, just because it's not going to become a law, means he doesn't have to denounce it.
The governor has been the target of past criticism for saying that the civil rights era in Mississippi wasn't that bad. No, that was fine, especially for those, you know, for those three kids, the civil rights workers. It was awesome for them.
Right.
And for everyone that was black. It's just, I've been doing a lot of reading about that for a project I'm working on that you're aware of. And, and I, in fact, I talked to, some pretty prominent people in the movement, and every single one of them, you say Mississippi, and they make the same noise. It's just, they go, oh, oh, I mean, just, it was so bad. It was so, so bad. And culturally, that's where my roots are. And it's really interesting as an adult now to go to really examine my parents for the signs of latent. My dad doesn't have a racist bone in his body. I really don't think he does. I think there's some things he says and does that are sort of on the borderline there. But and it's all about how they grew up and in what communities. My dad's dad, who I never knew, owned a series of bad business investments, really, and he ran a store, a little country store, a little, you know, five and dime in Long Beach, Mississippi, and most of his customers were black, and he really went tits up in that business because he kept extending lines of credit to folks that just couldn't afford food, that just couldn't afford it, and he took all of that on the chin for them and ended up, you know, not being able to pay his own debts. And my dad grew up watching that, and it's just really fascinating to I won't talk about my mom but in any way, but it's fascinating to really look back at my roots and try and figure out where my own ideas about race have come from, because I certainly didn't it's really hard to nail down. But Mississippi, it was just a fucking nightmare in the civil rights era.
If you recall, Forrest Gump is related to Nathan Bedford Forrest.
He's named after him, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
I remember.
Right. And because you are Gump-like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a connection there.
You don't want me to dig into my family tree. I'm already related to fucking Lee Harvey Oswald. That would be a good one.
That would be hilarious.
The Lincoln guy.
So, yeah, I mean, and I think it was Shelby Foote in the Ken Burns documentary series who said that there are two, he could name two geniuses from the Civil War. One was Abraham Lincoln, and the other was Nathan Bedford Forrest. I mean, there's a historical conversation to be had about Forrest as a, you know, Confederate commander. He was, you know, he was a bastard. I mean, he was ruthless. But he was a master strategist in that war. But he was also the founder of the KKK. And again, you stick Nathan Bedford Forrest in the faces of an African-American population, or just any population that has a sense of decency about it, regardless of race, then that's going to be offensive. Sure. And that speaks to the entire debate about the Confederacy. There's a historical discussion, and then there's the inherent offensiveness about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, look who the South are really holding up as icons. Yes, the South, they were heroes to you, but look at what they were doing. I mean, they committed treason of the worst kind in the United States of America. They're responsible. That treason led to the deaths of 600,000 Americans. I mean, there was a measurable percentage drop in the population of the United States because of that war.
Oh, God. Not just the population, but, I mean, think about the number of existing American dynasties, financial empires. Yeah. The Civil War ruined this country. I mean, it just, on both sides, it ruined this country. I mean, there are very few surviving empires, American empires that are antebellum empires. Oh, and by the way, doesn't Lady Antebellum, doesn't the name of that band just piss you off? Lady Antebellum. I think that's the most, that's just an awful, awful, culturally insensitive name.
Yeah, okay.
For a group, Lady Antebellum. That's just pissing, what do you mean, Antebellum? You like it better, pre-Civil War? You liked it better, is that what you're saying? You liked it better. Lady Antebellum, fuck you. I just don't understand that name. It's like, why you wouldn't name a band, you know, Lady things before the Civil War were awesome. I mean, it's just, yeah. It just seems like a really insensitive name, Lady Antebellum.
And and you know what else? Fuck Lynyrd Skynyrd while we're at it. I just want to throw that in there.
Lady Antebellum.
Lady Antebellum. So Haley Barbour won't denounce these Nathan Bedford Forrest license plates. But he ought to. Oh, speaking of terrible, terrible people, you've read about this this reporter from CBS, Lara Logan, who was...
God, just awful.
The worst thing imaginable happened to her in Egypt. I mean, she was accosted by a throng of protesters and repeatedly and extendedly sexually assaulted in this crowd.
Yeah.
And... what's the reaction from certain conservative circles? Oh, what it get? Just guess what it is.
This is Islam.
What? No.
No.
She
had it coming.
She had it coming. She deserved it. She deserved it. Gateway Pundit. I don't know if you're familiar with the Gateway Pundit. He's a popular wingnut blogger.
Yeah.
Here's his piece. The headline reads: "You want to talk about a war against women? This is sort of reaching back to last week's show. It's a war against women on the right. It really is. Here's the headline. After sexual assault and beating, CBS reporter Logan learns that political correctness is a killer." In bold. "Lara Logan is lucky she's alive. Her liberal belief system almost got her killed on Friday. This talented reporter will never be the same. Why did this attractive blonde female reporter wander into Tahrir Square last Friday? Why would she think that it was a good idea? Did she not see the violence in the square the last 3 weeks? Did she not see the rock throwing? Did she miss the camels? Did her colleagues tell her about the Western journalists who were viciously assaulted on the square? Did she forget about the taunts from the Egyptian thugs the day before? What was she thinking? Was it her political correctness that about got her killed? Did she think things would be different for her?" CBS News says Lara Logan, shown covering in reaction to Cairo's Tahrir Square the day Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak stepped down, was attacked on Friday, blah, blah, blah. This is a caption of the picture here. We're just reading the screen capture. So basically this is, you know, if she wasn't dressed like a slut, she wouldn't have been raped. You know, this is the blame the victim mentality that we see on the right all the goddamn time.
Well, and then there's another avenue that they're taking, if not blame the victim. And this is from a woman, Debbie Schlussel, Schlussel. No idea how to pronounce it, but she's blaming it on Islam. She says, "You know, this is what you get. Basically, the title is How Muslims Celebrate Victory. Egypt's peaceful, moderate, democratic protesters." So she says they aren't so dismissive of the threats. They're talking about liberals when those threats are directed at them instead of us, the little people. And yet they still won't admit that this is Islam. Lara Logan was among the chief cheerleaders of this revolution by animals. Now she knows what Islamic revolution is really all about.
That'll show her.
Yeah, that'll show democracy. Her. Democracy just got gang raped, folks. By these animals, these mostly peaceful. And then so in the comments, you know, liberal commentators are dropping pictures of gang rapes at Mardi Gras. You know, gang rape doesn't necessarily need a political, you know, or religious fanaticism behind it. It simply happens.
Yeah.
In times of chaos and you know, not to excuse the guys. In fact, some of the guys got their picture took with her, and Lara Logan's husband is like a military contractor. He like builds things that kills people. So good luck to those guys in that picture. They're all going to end up floating in the fucking Euphrates.
Oh my God.
Or the Nile, whatever runs through there.
Has been covering this is Angry Black Lady, angryblacklady.com. She's also a blogger for Balloon Juice. Some really good stuff, not only about this, but also about the South Dakota situation, which we'll get to in just a second. We're way late. We're way late on the show. And I promised you a shorter show this week.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look good. We're 45 minutes in, and we haven't even talked about soap yet.
Sorry, girls.
The Bob and Elvis Show is brought to you by, and exclusively so, by www.bubblegenius.com. Bubble Genius, pure products. Pure genius, Bubble Genius. We've got a brand new commercial coming up this week and lots of other good stuff from Bubble Genius. Hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. And we'll do that commercial right now.
Oh, welcome to Bubble Genius.
We come in peace.
Hey, wow, man. Aliens!
We are in search of your planet's greatest achievements.
This is totally cool, dude. Here's some Shakespeare. Here's some Einstein. And here's our awesome glow-in-the-dark soap. An alien and a UFO.
What is this soap you speak of?
You get it wet, like so, and it lathers up and gets you clean, man. And look! It glows in the dark!
These bubbles are out of this world.
I, for one, welcome our sudsy alien overlords, man.
Take us to your bathtub.
Bubble Genius, because you never know who's going to stop by.
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Yep. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And by the way, big promo code. Enter BOBANDELVIS, Bob and Elvis, and get 15% off your entire order. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. And they got big news on the Bob and Elvis soap front. Mm. Next time we talk about them. They've got... they've created their fragrance for us. Their,
fragrance?
The fragrance for our Bob and Elvis soap.
Are you having a CBS woman reporter from the Grammys moment?
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah. That, did they ever determine what caused her to speak gibberish?
That was kind of terrifying, though. I would think she just smoked a massive bowl right before she went out, except that towards the end of it, she looked like she was going to start crying. Like, something in her forebrain realized what was happening, that she was making this word salad, and she got really upset. Like, it was really quite scary. I want to know what's behind that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's news, because we see every time Sarah Palin opens her mouth, that's what happens, basically. I mean, I thought, another woman who, when she opens her mouth, just nothing but gibberish comes out? That's Sarah Palin. But well, I've watched it several times, and it really is traumatic. To look at. I've never seen a cave-in like that.
I mean, I thought, as you could hear, I was queuing up the music here. I thought it was going to be, it's really like the beginning of an episode of House. Mm-hmm. You see, like House MD. They always start out with some very bizarre medical condition, and then they segue right into the theme song after the medical condition occurs. And it's just something that's just right out of that show. It's going to be someone who just suddenly can't help but to speak gibberish, and that fascinates Dr. Gregory House.
I want to be the guy. I think the best job in Hollywood is the guy that reads submissions from real doctors to that show. They're like, oh my God, I've got a good one. Like, the things that doctors know that they would only tell some anonymous producer that they can turn into a show episode. Because you know there is that guy on that show, where they're constantly just getting unsolicited emails or letters from real doctors saying, oh my God, I had a guy with a penis growing out of his ankle. You know, just these great things. I want to be that guy. And they'd probably send pictures. That'd probably be a really fun job.
The irony is that she was more articulate than Tom Brokaw.
Not an angry black lady is awesome, by the way. I'm checking it out.
By the way, yeah.
And she's got you blog rolled, so that's nice. Or us. Mm-hmm. You, I should say.
Yeah, she's great. She's just I just saw her. She popped up on Balloon Juice, and she is quite angry. She's quite angry.
Angry woman.
Anyway, so yeah, you definitely check that out, because the South Dakota situation. I mean, South Dakota is like it's nice that the name South is in there, because it's like an honorary Bible Belt state without being in the Bible Belt. If you remember, maybe it was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, they tried to ban abortion in all cases, including rape.
Yeah.
And this time, they're trying to you know, there, this guy, Phil Jensen, this state representative, is trying to pass this measure whereby, you know, justifiable homicide will include, see if we can understand this legalese, where justifiable homicide would include killing someone who was trying to kill a fetus.
Mm-hmm. Stop, that's my fetus. Blam, blam.
Yeah, and the way he explains it is that it doesn't involve abortion doctors or a woman, a pregnant woman going to an abortion clinic to have an abortion. Yeah, what it includes is, I mean, what he specifically says that he's talking about, which I find to be utter bullshit. We know what this is all about.
It happens all the time, yeah. What he's talking about.
Right. He's talking about, like, some hillbilly punching his pregnant wife in the stomach to try to... Your Skype connection just went bad shit right there.
Did it?
It just went kind of went... You went... Shit.
Awesome.
And that was great.
Oh yeah, I've got nothing but red lines here.
Mm. Yeah, but you sound good. I mean, you sound fine now. You're not auto-tuning or anything.
Really?
Yeah.
I've got nothing but red lines here.
Yeah. Skype.
Yikes.
Skype has been good to us recently. Please continue, Skype. Be nice.
Ooh, I mean, it's got a red exclamation point and everything.
Yeah, that means that's the "you're fucked" exclamation point. I know that one well.
Oh, wait. Now it's up to all blue bars.
There you go. Well, we're good. We're good. It's not making any crazy noises or auto-tuning, so we're okay.
Yay.
Okay. Thank you, Skype. Thank you. I plunked some more quarters in the machine.
Mm.
I asked Gilligan to pedal harder on his bamboo bicycle.
And you consider the round trip distance that these packets are making with our voices in is really quite remarkable.
It really, really is.
It really is. It's, I mean, if you think about what is happening, that the sound that's coming out of my mouth is being digitized and then packetized and then routed and then shipped and then in your ear and then the reverse happens. It's unbelievable that it works at all.
Thousands of miles. I mean, it's literally thousands of miles that it's happening. That's happening. Yes. And it shouldn't. It's crazy technology. But and really, the fact that we get occasional noises and auto-tuning, well, fine.
Yeah.
The technology still staggers me. Yeah. Like airplanes still staggers me.
I mean, anyway. I've been looking in these, you know, I've got all these Look magazines and from Ted Sorensen's era because he was writing for it. And I've been looking at the ads and, you know, these ads for long distance within our lifetimes. And certainly within our parents' lifetime, it was like long distance phone calling was like the most complicated, expensive thing on earth. You know, just, oh my God, long distance phone call. And now look what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not costing me a dime except for my DSL, you know?
Right. So this guy, Phil Jensen, the state representative in South Dakota, the state politician, he has recently, I believe it's today, he changed the language in the law to include the word unlawful killing of a fetus, which would then preclude abortion because abortion is legal for now in that state. If it was made illegal, and say in the case of underage girls or rape victims or whatever, then they can shoot away. Mm-hmm. Then they can shoot away, right? So so all they got to do is make some form of abortion illegal to allow all of the vigilante wig nuts to go out, you know, the pro-life people, the right to life people, to go out and start killing both abortion providers and women who want to have an abortion.
Yeah, because the example he gave, I was auto-tuning when we were talking about it, but the example he gave was the lawful killing of the boyfriend who doesn't want the baby and starts punching the mother in the belly to force, you know, a redneck abortion, basically. And if that woman had access to weaponry at the time, which would probably preclude that guy from beating on her belly, if she was, you know, known to be packing, you know, had a 38 revolver slung under her arm, that if she took said revolver and shot him copiously in the cranium, hey, no problem. He was beating on your belly.
Right.
Yeah. Great law.
And see, this is what makes it suspect. Penal Code Section 187. In South Dakota law. Murder is unlawful killing of a human being or a fetus with malice aforethought. So it's already illegal So why do it again? Why relitigate? I mean, why?
Because that's what they're doing. They're now in power, and it's these ridiculous social issues that they know can drum up the pro-life, you know, evangelical, frothy, chubby base. It's what they do. Mm-hmm. It's what they do.
Right.
And it's you know, we're seeing the tail end of its efficacy as a political strategy. So huzzah. Let them try and – I mean they don't seem to realize how on the ass end of these social issues they really are when they go to these extremes. It's just going to backfire.
Yeah.
So
well, – yeah. I mean, he's doing two things here, and this has become obvious as part of their strategy, at least in the last – I would say upwards of 10 years at least, which is you know, this guy is – first of all, he's pandering to the wingnut base. I mean that's obvious. The sure. other thing that he's doing, and this is much more nefarious – is all of these guys are simply terrorizing abortion providers and women who are considering that as an option.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're
doing.
If
you can't outlaw it, they need to make it – if you can't make it illegal, they need to make it absolutely terrifying to even consider walking in that door or getting out of your car anywhere near a place like that.
Right.
I mean it's domestic emotional terrorism. I mean,
exactly.
It's absolutely god-awful.
Let's call a spade a spade. It's terrorism. I mean it's literally terrorism. Yeah. I mean, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're injecting the notion in the minds of people considering it and who provide it.
Yeah,
that they could be targeted to be assassinated or shot.
Not only could be, but should be.
Right.
I mean, should be is even worse. I mean, that it's societally that is acceptable by law the laws of these states that should protect. You know it's that they should be assaulted or killed for it. I mean it's absolutely insane. I hope it's one of these things that Peanuts generation will look back the way we look back at, you know, at civil rights and think, what in the fuck?
What they're trying to do is they're trying to gut it as a practice because yeah. I mean who's gonna wanna sign on to a gig where you're working at a facility that provides abortions?
Yeah,
or provides abortion services. Who wants to do that?
Yeah.
To put your life at risk.
Yeah. An extremely brave, dedicated person to suit up for that job.
So what's obvious is this law will never pass, just like the one that would have banned abortion in the cases of rape.
Yeah.
It'll never pass, but the cumulative effect is actually functioning to terrorize women, to terrorize doctors.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's doing. That's what it's doing.
Yeah. The unspoken part of this, which is always there in the abortion debate, is that it's class warfare. I mean, if you look at the abortion statistics and who is, you know, who's out there doing it, and that, you know, liberals would rather no one did, but that if you have to, it's legal and safe. You know, it's class warfare.
Yeah,
it's absolutely a form of class warfare that never gets talked about, that doesn't get talked about enough, and that you know is just that much more insidious for being that way.
Because rich people, the wives of politicians, the daughters of politicians, they can go and they can do these things privately with the best doctors in the world.
Yes.
But the poor people are having their, you know, Planned Parenthood defunded. Mm-hmm. And they're having any means that they could possibly proceed about this demonized. Because mm-hmm. it's the most out in the open. Because it's these, mm-hmm. you know, these more public facilities that
right.
are being targeted.
Right.
And it's
yeah,
and
not
it is.
The not the gleaming white, you know, Mayo Clinic style, you know, polished chrome, just these beautiful Swiss clinics where you get flown in and flown out overnight in a big manila envelope full of cash. It's the fucking rundown place on the corner that's doing its best with a federal grant and some, you know, some local funds.
Yeah. And it just prior to Roe v. Wade, I mean, it was the rich people who could always get it done anyway. I mean, then they could get it done too, and they wouldn't be pariah. I mean, they wouldn't be pariahs. Yeah. They would certainly.
The family doctor would come over.
Be
I mean, that's
yeah.
back when, you know. Oh yeah, call the family doctor. The family doctor in that era had all the secrets, man. Mm-hmm. All the debutantes saw the family doctor by 17.
Right. So
yeah, it's criminal. I mean, it's a war against women. It absolutely is.
I mean, all they got to do again. All they have to do is suggest it. Suggest the idea to continue to plant those seeds. And it functions. It functions as a form of terrorism. And it is what it is. And so, I mean, this it's a less serious topic. But it's the same strategy that the Republican leadership is using with the whole birther thing now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've been noticing this, but it's been a conga line of Republican leaders, John Boehner, Eric Cantor, who say, "Well, I don't believe, well, you know, the president's not a Muslim because he says he's not."
Mm-hmm. Wink, wink.
I take him at his word. Wink,
wink,
wink. But what they've done is by crowbarring that into the conversation, they're actually suggesting it and keeping that idea alive. And sure. When, you know, I saw Scarborough on Hardball the other day, and he did it too. He said, "I believe that the president's a Christian because he says he is," which is like saying, if you're saying that to any Republicans, they're going to go, "Well, why should I believe what he says? He's probably lying because the president's a liar." Mm-hmm. So saying that is to anyone who might be inclined towards birtherism on the right is just, well, the president's lying if that's what he says. No, what you say, if he was really interested in dispelling it, in this case Scarborough, if he's really interested in dispelling it, he says, the president's a Christian because he is a Christian. He'll say because he says he is. That's too much gray area.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
I
like
just
saying
wouldn't
as far as
touch
I know.
It at all. I mean, anybody, everybody is. You only know anybody is what they are based on what they say. I mean, if I walked up to you and said, "Hi, I'm an atheist," you'd have no way of testing that unless you know, other than me telling you that. Hopefully, not my behavior. Oh, wait, a call's coming in. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's my mother. Sorry.
Oh, God.
I answered that one.
Oh, you should. That'd have been great. You should have taken it. Taking it for the good of the
show. Oh, wait, my real phone number is going to come up here. Oh, okay. Don't want the jackasses calling me on the telephone machine. All right. Yeah,
but we're also going to see, you know, our favorite phrase from the 2008 campaign, which is, "He's not a Muslim, as far as I know."
As far as we know. I mean, even Hillary used that one on 60 Minutes. That was beyond the pale. But no, it's a way of delegitimizing. Even throughout the entire Clinton era, when the Republican machine wasted no opportunity at delegitimizing his presidency and his character, you know, when did they ever say, "Well, I don't think he's really a Christian"? I mean, even while he's, you know, got the cigar out, it's just something you do with this president because you've got to. There's nothing else. I mean, when there's this vacuum. With Clinton, there was plenty to get up his ass about. I mean, he did have some serious character flaws. This guy, I mean, Obama is just unassailable in the real world, in the character world, because he's just had so little time to, his closet is so shallow because he's had so little time to pack it full of skeletons.
Yeah.
So they've got to delegitimize somehow. So it's, oh, Kenyan this and the rage, the sources of, I mean, there's actually a book, The Roots of Obama's Rage. What the fuck rage? Has there ever been a cooler cucumber on earth than this guy? And but that's just how deluded they are.
Well, that's one of the reasons they're so flummoxed, because, you know, they see, oh, black guy, he's got to be angry black guy, because black guys are naturally angry. They're angry at
that's
white
what
people.
They, do.
They want vengeance against white people. And so what flummoxes them so much is when the president comes out and is cool as a cucumber. I mean, he just comes out and he's pragmatic and he's sensible and he's, you know, he's willing to negotiate, which I think is part of his strategy. But I mean,
of course it is.
Right.
There's nothing that's not part of this president's strategy.
Mm-hmm. Part of his strategy is just to suggest that I'm willing to negotiate. He's kicking their asses all over the place with his budget deal.
Yeah.
You know. But regardless, I mean, this is the latest PPP poll indicates that 51% of Republicans saying they're going to vote in the upcoming primary. Presidential primary, 51% believe that president's a Muslim.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think that's a fantastic number. That makes me so happy that 51% of the base in that party is that fucking retarded and deluded and conspiratorial. I mean, by definition, that means no moderation in their potential candidate. I love that.
Yeah.
That one point above, I mean, a majority, 51% of that base, of the primary voting base, the base that gets out in the primaries, is up its ass so galactically that they will absolutely not tolerate someone who isn't full-on birther or just salivatingly insane. Mm-hmm. I love that number. Mm-hmm. That's the best number I've ever heard in politics.
Actually, I stand corrected. They think Barack Obama was not born in the United States. 51% was not born in the United States.
Right.
I wonder what percentage of those people believe that Hawaii is not in the United States. Barack Obama, and 28% who firmly believe that he was, and 21%.
Jesus Christ!
21%
that scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, it's even greater. It's like you got 51% say they don't think Barack Obama was born in the United States. 21% are unsure. So it's more like 72% of Republican primary voters in the 2012 primaries do not, I mean, basically don't believe that Barack Obama is a United States citizen or was a United States. Therefore, he's, you know, he's an illegitimate president.
Yeah. That's awesome. There's no room for moderation in your primary candidate in with those numbers. There's no, and that means, you know, independence and the non-salivating on both sides of the spectrum, there's no room for that in this upcoming election. That's an amazing number. It just pleases me to no end, that number.
Did you – I'm sure you've seen this at this point, but this – did you see the Franklin's focus group with all of the Iowa voters, the Iowa caucus voters?
Yeah, terrifying.
Yeah, it really is terrifying. Let's just play a little bit of this.
So it's this, important for us not to say.
The president speaking in this interview with Bill O'Reilly around the Super Bowl, and then this focus group with the lines digitizing across the screen, and then Frank Luntz will pop up with his Fisher-Price man hair and start talking to this focus group of Republican Iowa caucus goers, Republicans.
Our only two options are either the Muslim Brotherhood or a suppressed
but you don't want the Muslim
Egyptian
brother,
people. Right? What I want is a representative government in Egypt.
Okay.
Now remember, these are Republican caucus voters, so they're expected to be skeptical of what the president says. But the reaction was so negative, so overwhelming. What's the problem?
I don't think he has a grasp on how serious this could be. He doesn't seem to have it, you know, what the details are and what we want and what we need as a country.
He talks about making them into a republic, and he, but he, all he talks about is democracies. He doesn't know what a republic is.
Hello. Yeah, the president. You idiots in Iowa know better than the guy that gets the PDB every morning.
That's right.
Right?
The guy who's a constitutional scholar, right?
He doesn't know the difference between a republic
and
unaware, democracy.
He's right?
There's no coherent policy. I mean, you've got four people talking about four different things. They've disavowed the former ambassador now. No one seems to know what's going on.
I believe that Barack Obama's religious beliefs do govern his foreign policy.
And what are his religious beliefs?
I believe that he is a Muslim.
You do?
Oh, yes.
How many of you believe that here?
How many? Bunch of people raise their hand here.
Wow.
You believe he's like half of them. Half of them.
And you think that's having an impact on what he says and does?
Fundamentally,
absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Jack?
That's terrifying.
I do also.
Now, do you understand the...
Yeah. I mean, you get the idea. I mean, basically, how many people here believe that the president's a Muslim? Half of this focus group raises their hands.
And that's a random... I mean, focus groups are completely randomly... I mean, that's not like they went to Wingnut Central. You know, to downtown T-Bagistan. That's just a random sampling, those focus groups. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying. Just the level of... I mean, again, it feeds into that number, which I think is great, but the level of stupid to sit there and say that in front of... is terrifying. And not even that. The fundamental disconnect between... These guys are all supposed to be... These teabaggers and wingnuts are all supposed to be super pro-constitution. And one of the number one... You know, one of the absolute tenets of this of our government is that there's no religious test to office, right? Mm-hmm. So even if he was, I want to ask, what's your problem from a constitutional standpoint? Even if he was a Muslim, so what?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So what? So what? But you know what their so what is? Because Muslim equals terrorists. All Muslims are inherently terrorists. Or they're sympathetic to terrorists. So basically this is – I mean there have been more terrorist convictions under the first 2.5 years of the Barack Obama presidency than there were during the entire Bush presidency. Fact. Fact. Okay?
And more ringleaders killed by, you know, drone attacks. You know, which that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
But this guy's not doing. This guy has not done a whole lot that's pro Al Qaeda, for Christ's sake.
No, he's soft on terrorism. He's
soft.
Like
because in that clip he wouldn't come out and immediately damn an organization with the word Muslim in the title.
Yeah.
What is our foreign policy exactly? Where should point to me? Give me the Secretary of State and the President and sit down and point to the paragraph in our foreign policy doctrine that says exactly what we do when a fucking Twitter revolution blows through Egypt. What are we supposed to do? One of those wingnuts in that focus panel, tell me what the right answer is.
I want to see one of these brainiacs point to a map the location of Cairo. Not a single one of them could. I don't
think any of them would be shocked that Egypt is in fucking North Africa. I mean, would that just blow their minds? Oh my God, Africa and Egypt, and their heads explode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think half of the Republican field, the primary front runners, could point to where Cairo is on a map. Certainly not Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin.
No, they couldn't tell you that Iran is sandwiched between Afghanistan and Iraq, for Christ's sake.
And yet the president's over. The president doesn't know the difference between democracy and a republic.
Yeah. He doesn't know. He doesn't know.
Constitutional scholar.
Watching that football game.
These are the people who are going to vote for Sarah Palin, who doesn't know the location, the text, the document that the word unalienable is located. You know, they're going to vote for Sarah Palin.
Right. But again, if that had not been a focus group, but just like a round table, the moderator should have, I mean, the instant question to that group is, so what if he is, right? I mean, what is your the whole point of our separation of church and state, even though they won't, you know, believe that or listen to it, is that there's no religious test for public for these offices. You will not be barred from holding these offices based on your personal religious beliefs.
Exactly.
So what if he was a fucking Muslim? Point to any external decision or policy that he's made that's pro-terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's not one.
It's so beyond stupid. I can't bear it.
And that's, to me, that's where it inherently comes down to race, because you eliminate all the facts, and what they're doing is they're seeing dark skinned guy, guy with exotic name, quote, and I put exotic in quotes, must be a Muslim.
It is a pretty exotic name, I mean, empirically.
It's an exotic name, but so is Rance Priebus or Steny Hoyer, for God's sake.
Yeah, Steny Hoyer.
I mean, these are exotic names. I mean, there have been a history. We've had a president named Grover Cleveland, for God's sake.
Grover.
Grover Cleveland. I mean, Roosevelt is kind of an exotic name.
Well,
I mean, how many people do you know were named
Roosevelt? You don't want to mess with the Dutch.
You don't want to mess with the Dutch. That's
right. Dutch owned all that shit in Africa for a while there.
We just have a history. I mean, we had a president named Millard Fillmore.
Millard Fillmore.
We had a president Millard Fillmore.
Millard. Yeah, and it's so funny reading all that I have about JFK, the panic among, especially in the Deep South, about just about Catholicism. I mean, that might as well have been a terrorist, you know, a terror-backing religion, a baby-eating religion, Catholicism, to pointy-hatted, you know, white-sheet-wearing Southern idiots. Catholicism was a terror in the 1960s. I mean, that's incomprehensible to me.
Right. Sorry, I didn't mean to start the Bubble Genius music so early.
No, that's fine.
But it's actually good that we get to Bubble Genius right now. And you know what? You know, bitch about Barack Obama's exotic name. If you want to bitch about it, why don't you call the Rush Limbaugh Show, huh?
Rush.
Exotic names. Bob and Elvis Show. That's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show, brought to you exclusively by Bubble Genius, www.bubblegenius.com. And if you were one of the first 10 people to donate to the fundraiser this past week, you're receiving in the mail any day now your very own Bob and Elvis bar of soap. And Bubble Genius came up with a specific fragrance for that soap. And I think we were pushing for something like cat urine and coffee, or, I don't know, bicycle ball sweat and... I don't know. dead possum or something like that.
Yeah.
But instead, they've gone with something more palatable, something more fragrant than that. Evidently, it's a fragrance that mixes basil, lime, vanilla, tea tree, coffee, which is good, weed.
That's for me.
Weed and a touch of dirt.
Dirt. That's for you. Dirt.
Right. Dirt. Why am I dirt?
I don't know. The weed's for me, though.
Right. I think maybe coffee is me, because I'm on my, like, sixth or seventh cup of coffee for the day. Those are going to be shipping out Thursday.
Thursday.
So you'll have your soap very soon, and with our smiling faces embedded into that soap. Oh, and by the way, it glows in the dark.
Oh, cool.
Isn't that... That's fucking great.
Yeah, I have quite a bit of their glow-in-the-dark soap, and I love it.
And speaking of us, don't forget your promo code, Bob and Elvis, for 15% off your entire order. Also, it's International Friendship Week, so if you enter the coupon code FRIEND, F-R-I-E-N-D, you'll actually get 20% off everything through the 23rd of February.
Huzzah!
Mm-hmm. Excelsior. They have there also their sky-inspired collection. Dark Suds of the Moon. Houston, we most definitely don't have a problem with this 2.5-inch ball of rain-scented glow-in-the-dark soap. Unidentified foaming object. 3-inch glow-in-the-dark UFO soap. Keep the kids busy in the tub for hours. Lots of space-themed soaps at Bubble Genius. So, my God, go and get the best goddamn soap in the world. Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. It's a WWW, full stop, Bubble Genius, full stop, COM.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
And we continue to be late. I think this is going to keep us from actually putting this show on the real radio, is that we just, it's impossible
for
us to,
we have no sense of time.
We just can't hold to a schedule. Yeah. And we say fuck a lot. So that's, it's those two things that actually prevent us and will keep us from doing this in a serious way.
When I screamed Jesus Christ out loud a minute ago, like really loud, yeah. That was because a cat jumped up on my office window. I'm on the second floor. I'm a story above ground level, mm-hmm. two stories, and somehow cats get up on this level of the roof, and sometimes they'll come over and meow at me, but Sox, the black and white cat, just leapt at the window straight in front of my desk, and it looked like he was shot from a catapult, and just splat against the window. He was attacking something and just landed flat with his belly and his arms out, askew, and his legs just flat on the window for, 2 seconds and hung there and then fell back down. That's what terrified me and why I shouted Jesus Christ. So.
Good.
Well, upon playback, you may not know, the careful listener will hear me react in shock to something, and it was attack of the killer cat up there.
I thought you were replacing huzzah with Jesus Christ.
No, my God, it scared the crap out of me.
Less creative.
I'm just sitting here, and all of a sudden this cat hits the window like it was thrown. It was terrifying.
Yeah. I was shocked. No complaints last week to your suggestion of perhaps putting all your cats in burlap sacks and then dumping them in the river. not a single gripe. So maybe not a lot of cat fans listening to the show.
Apparently.
And we talk about this a lot, that Americans are in denial about their actual liberalism. You know, they claim that they're conservative. When the broad question is asked, are you, do you self-identify as conservative, liberal, or independent? Most people pick independent and conservative. But when you ask issue by issue, they're much more liberal on the issues. You know, and the same thing happened in a poll recently with regards to spending. They said, no, we hate spending. We don't like spending. But when
break
you
it
ask,
down into its components.
When you break it down to a component, they love, Americans love spending. Americans are closet socialists.
Sure.
And in fact, there's a piece today on Andrew Sullivan's blog talking about how Americans are closet socialists. We just love, love, love our spending. You know, people want education spending to increase or stay the same by vast majorities. Vast majorities want public school spending to increase or stay the same. 56% wanted to increase. Veterans benefits, 51% wanted to increase, 40% wanted to stay the same. College financial aid, increase, 44%, 37% stay the same. Only 16% wanted cut. Medicare, increase, 40% stay the same, 43%. Only 12% want to cut Medicare. Healthcare spending.
Oh, sure.
Healthcare spending, only 24% want to cut healthcare spending. These are the American voters. Aid to poor people in the United States, only 20% want to cut. Only 12% want to cut Social Security.
Yeah, when you put it that way, aid to poor people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, a lot harder to say, yeah, fuck that, than it is, you know, than to say entitlement programs or welfare.
Yeah.
You know, there's no race or class warfare bias in aid to poor people.
Yeah. The one thing, and by the scantest, oh, it's even still it's still a minority of people. The thing that people want to cut most is foreign aid. Which yeah. is such a small part of the budget. It's ridiculous. If you put it on a pie chart, it's not even a line. It's almost invisible on a pie chart, the amount of spending that goes to foreign aid.
And dollar for dollar, except where it goes down the shithole of corruption and you know, propping up dictators, dollar for dollar is probably the best use money in the federal government. I mean, for what it buys in foreign aid and you know, like a tank of clean water, that stuff. We should be all for that. I mean, I'd rather be paying for tanks of clean water and tennis shoes now than to dethrone a fucking warlord in 5 years, right? I mean, prosperity, schools, roads, medicine, and drinkable water. That's how you stop wars.
Mm-hmm. Only 18% want to cut crime funding to prevent crime.
That seems like a very high number. Crime funding.
Did I say crime funding? It's late in the show. They want to cut crime prevention.
That's like an awful lot, though. Almost one in five want to defund fighting crime. What the fuck?
Mm. Or just to decrease spending, I think.
Yeah, but that's the same thing.
Yeah.
The fuck?
Crime prevention.
It's just some percentage of people are douchebags, and most of the social spending program people that are against that are the single, you know, young, the ones that just have no skin in the game. No parent's gonna say, even me. I mean, I'm a paycheck away from or a pink slip away from having absolutely no medical care or paying through my nose for Cobra. I would never, and with the relatively good health coverage I've got, I'd never want to defund something like Medicare or Medicaid that helps children, for Christ's sake. What the fuck?
And these are staggering numbers. Look at this. Only 21% want to cut infrastructure spending. 37% wanted to stay the same. 38% wanted to increase. Environmental protection, only 26% want to cut it. 36% wanted to stay the same. 36% wanted to increase. So it's I mean, we're talking about 72% want to keep environmental protection where it is or increase.
That's one of the first things the GOP goes after when they're looking at the budget. Oh, we don't need USDA, we don't need the EPA. Regulation is government regulation, because the GOP has done such a good job of demonizing, of making regulation concomitant or synonymous with, you know, fucking commerce and GDP up the asshole.
Yeah.
And it's just not true. You know, I mean, look at Clinton and it's one of these things like, you know, higher taxes prohibits business growth and blah, blah, blah. It's just one of these GOP myths that regulation of the meat we eat and the water we drink is somehow anti-capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Oh, defund the EPA. We don't need the USDA. Fuck that. I'll go out and eat whatever meat they put in front of me. It's just wasteful government bureaucracy.
And that was
There may be some bureaucracy in that, but I'd still like somebody checking the meat I put in my mouth.
Right. And that's the way everyone feels. You ask them about specifics, and they're going to give you answers that sound much more reasonable. You ask them in broad things. Well, do you fancy yourself a conservative or a liberal? You might as well say, do you fancy yourself a real American, or do you fancy yourself to be an effete pedophile that smells like patchouli? Yeah, that's. Yeah. I mean, that's what – I mean, the word liberal has been so vastly demonized over the last 40 years that there's no reason why anyone – I mean, it's, well, there's absolutely a reason why people are denying it because of that.
Yeah.
And and so it's to me, you get a false positive there. So you ask them issue by issue, and American people are more reasonable. And it's the same with spending.
Sure. Yeah. And yeah, it's just a giant. I mean, oh yeah, but also on Sullivan today, related but sort of anti-Obama is these numbers coming out of the Pentagon, the defense spending. I don't know what that's about from a so-called Democrat. You know why we need the Pentagon budget is insane, and it seems to only be going up. And I don't know if there's some line to be drawn between defense spending and let's say you cut 8% out of the Pentagon budget over the next X years, and within that event horizon, another 9/11 happens, something like 9/11. Is there a political line? Is that why it's cover, so that you can say, if there is an attack, hey, I funded the Defense Department, you know, X trillions of dollars more than my predecessor, so don't blame me. I mean, is that what it is? Because I don't get it. I think the Pentagon should be hamstrung the fuck up funding wise. I mean, I think that's where the biggest hole I think it's all discretionary spending, if you ask me. Fuck it. Gut the Pentagon. Yeah. But this president is not doing that in any way. It's going the opposite direction.
Well, we know why. I mean, we know exactly why. It's why we fight. You know, it's because every single congressional district has some facet of the military. Yeah, the military-industrial complex. Skin in the game. Yeah. Which is, you've been on your conference call for too long.
Oh, sorry. Net-net.
Right.
At the end of the day.
Are we on the same page about skin in the game? Do we want to go all in, or do we want to double down?
Skin in the game is a much more political term than business. I never hear that term in business.
That's right. So, you know, Americans are closet socialists. And, you know, there was another accompanying thing that said people who believe they're not receiving government benefits, people who are against government spending, are actually receiving government benefits in some way.
Oh, of course.
You know, like...
just without saying.
Some of the items there... They're getting a home mortgage interest deduction. They're getting student loans, earned income tax credit, Pell Grants, Social Security, you know.
Sure.
And they said, no. We're not using a government social program. No, we hate that. But they're actually getting it. People are.
I live in the middle of a cornfield. It's the biggest government subsidy in the whole state.
Right.
Fucking ethanol.
We don't realize it, and. I had a debate with a wingnut on Twitter this past week about that.
Uh-oh.
Just totally clueless. Doesn't even know.
Send
I just
them to
kept,
me.
I kept directing him to Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, saying, you know, it's right there. You know, Congress can raise taxes. Congress can use those tax revenues for the general welfare. And so there, case closed. And he goes, but I don't agree with that. Well, you can't demand something be constitutional, and then when I show you the line item, the clause in the Constitution, you can't just reject that clause. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it does.
So, hey, by the way, if you want to buy my house, send me an email.
Yeah, and if you want a Farm of Doom, you better hurry up.
Yeah, Farm of Doom or a McMansion of Doom. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us. You fudge with the best. We shall be back next week. Take care, everybody.
Net.
Hey now.